welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program today. In studio with me is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions for him during our next half hour. You can call those in to a slightly different phone number than usual. Call 494-5920. Again, that's 494-5920 if you've got questions for Mayor Rozworski today. You can send emails to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, I notice you're not wearing a big winter coat, which you and I might have had in previous years where we've done this show in March, and it seems like your city's gotten through what's been a relatively mild winter pretty easily.
Yeah, good afternoon, Stan. We certainly have. I don't think anybody can complain about the weather that we've had this year. It's been good on several fronts. The ability to save some money on snow removal costs, the ability to continue some of the construction projects both that we have going publicly and that private people are doing with some of the weather that we've had. And so, yeah, it's been a money saver, but it's also helped with efficiency and production. So looks like we could have just a little bit coming, but probably not too much. And looks like we'll get through this winter in pretty good shape. I'll have to find a place to put some of the extra salt.
Well, let's get right to listener questions that have come in. Just a little bit ago, Alex emailed us at our email address, which is ask@wbaa.org. And Alex says, I'm a citizen of Lafayette, but I was an attendee at the West Lafayette City Council meeting where the Safe Haven resolution was passed. What kind of support do you plan on extending to immigrants in Lafayette? Yet, he wants to know.
Well, that's a good question. You know, we know that the immigration, I don't use the word situation, but that we find ourselves in and some of the rhetoric that's coming out of Washington, D.C. certainly has created fear within the Hispanic and immigrant communities. When we were in Washington, D.C. last week, every congressional person that we spoke with, we brought up the immigration issue and that the current tone, the rollout, and some of those policies that we certainly didn't believe was good. You know, I personally don't believe they're good for America. They're not moving us in the right direction. And, you know, we got a good response that people said, you know, we really do need to find a reasonable, common-sense solution to the immigration issue. It doesn't do us any good to scare people. It doesn't do us any good to create that type of fear in local communities and families. And so,
that said, a number of Indiana's congressmen are broadly very supportive of what's been going on with the executive orders.
Well, I think, you know, when you talk to them on an individual level, I think there is some room there where we might be able to find some common ground. I'm not sure that you're right that we'll ever reach full agreement on that, but I think everybody does realize that there has to be something done and something that's not just based on that fear or that concern. Here locally, you know, we had there was an immigration summit that was held last weekend. I attended that. Scott Galloway from the Lafayette Police Department attended that, spoke to a lot of people at that, heard their concerns. They've asked if I can meet with them, a smaller group of them, which I plan to do. So we're going to keep that dialogue going. And then just this morning, actually, before I came over here, I met with several people from the LUM Immigration Clinic, and they met with me and the police chief of police, Patrick Flannelly, to go over some things to make sure we were kind of all on the same page. And I feel here locally, you know, that we're doing very well. We are a warm, welcoming community. Our police department is not going to become the immigration police. We're not going to be going door to door and trying to round people up or, you know, asking people just randomly for their immigration status. And I think, you know, we want to calm those fears.
To Alex's question, would you consider passing a similar safe haven resolution through your city council that West Lafayette's city council just passed?
You know, we haven't really discussed that, and I'd need to look at that a little bit closer. I know that there were some concerns in it originally that maybe parts of it would violate or put the police departments in a position to violate the state law, and maybe that was amended during the meeting. I'm not sure, to be honest with you. So we'd have to look at that. We'd have to look at the wording. We certainly want to help help calm some of those fears. But, you know, law enforcement does also have a job to do, and there are certain things that they are required to do, and we'd want to make sure that we were following that law also. But I think the most important thing is to really create that dialogue with our local people and our local communities to make sure they understand what we're doing here locally, and I think most of them do, but then continue to put the pressure on Washington, D.C. to actually come up with a process and a pathway that allows, you know, good, hardworking people that are here paying their taxes, doing the right things, children that's been brought here, you know, when they were infants, to find that opportunity to stay and move towards citizenship and help become, you know, productive members of this country. We need them. We continue to grow. When you look at the global economy, when you look at the number of people that are baby boomers that are going to be leaving the workforce, when you look at the potential growth of the economy, you know, we need everybody, and we're going to have to learn to pull together and do the right thing to make sure that we position the United States for the future.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Call in your questions to 494-5920. Send emails to ask@WBAA.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. We've been talking a lot with Mayor Dennis on our recent shows about some of the new high-rises that are planned for West Lafayette, and people are going to be able to see them indeed from your downtown, from across the river, because some of these are fairly large that are planned. Are you worried at all that you are sort of competing your cities for the same sort of millennial-type customer who might want to live in one of these kind of big, flashy, architecturally neat new buildings?
Well, I don't feel like we're competing with West Lafayette. As you know, the governments here in the community work very well together. And when you look at the State Street Project, you look at the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation's Riverfront Project, and you tie all those together, you look what they're doing downtown, you look what we're doing downtown with the MARC. And we've said all along, Mayor Dennis and I have both said, you know, our goal is in the future to create opportunities for people to go back and forth between Lafayette, West Lafayette, have different options, different types of options, and retain that small town feel, but really have people also feel like they're kind of in one larger downtown area with lots of different venues for arts, entertainment, dining, recreation, living, and that you feel like you're in a bigger city, but it's, you know, Lafayette and West Lafayette working together. And so I don't feel like we're in competition. I think we'll continue to do things that complement each other. I don't think the high rises, you know, we'll have the MARC, which is not a high rise compared to what's being built, but I think you'll see that fill up very quickly. I think that'll be a living option that people will want. And
is this at all something of a housing arms race of whoever can build the neatest, coolest thing, whatever the size is? Because clearly the river is something of a divider, of course, in many different ways, both symbolically and physically, between your two cities. And even though crossing it is going to be the way to get to the new carve-out downtown that West Lafayette is trying to build, clearly people could stand on a bridge between the two and look one way at one city and the other way at the other city and go, if I had to choose between these two, which would I want to live at? Which looks neater, cooler? Which looks like it's the more happening place to be? Is that a concern that you've got, that you're going to have to sort of keep up with the Joneses in your own downtown?
No, I mean, I think, as I said, I think that's the wonderful thing about human beings in general, and of course the diverse population that we have here in Lafayette, West Lafayette, and Tippecanoe County, is not everybody is the same. Not everybody wants to live in a high rise. Not everybody wants to live where maybe there's 400 people, you know, close to them. Some of them may want a smaller setting. They may want a more intimate setting. They may be able to walk to things a little bit easier. And I think that we have enough diversity in the community, and that we do continue to grow, and we'll continue to grow and bring in different types of people with different styles and different tastes and different needs and different wants. And that, you know, that's the real key. How do you keep designing and doing things that meet all of those needs? Not everybody is going to want to do the same thing. Not everybody likes to hike or bike, but maybe they like to do other things. Maybe they like to canoe. So I think there's enough diversity in our population here, and I think we'll continue to grow in a way that will make all those options viable. And that's not to say that if a developer looked at downtown Lafayette, because that's the other thing. We both only have a limited number of places that we can build those types of structures and make everything work on either side of the river. There's only so much land. If somebody wanted to build a high rise and it fit and it could look back over to West Lafayette and complement what they're doing, we would certainly entertain that. But I don't feel a need that we've got to try to get something built that's a high rise just to compete with West Lafayette. And of course, if they're looking over here at Lafayette, then hopefully they'll come over here and do things and vice versa. We really want people to get in that mindset of going back and forth. That's the real key to the long-term stability of all of, Tippecanoe County, is that ability for people to see this whole area and this whole region as a great place to live, to work, to raise your family, to use the amenities and the recreational opportunities that all of us provide.
Let's talk about something else your city council did recently, which is approve a measure which allows for punishment of people who do not park within parking space lines. You pushed for this ordinance to get passed. Why did you find it so important?
Well, it's one of the things that as we were working through Streetscape and we worked through our downtown businesses, obviously parking is a significant issue. And one of the things that kept getting brought up was, some people park like this, some people leave a giant gap, some people get right up on folks' bumpers and different things. And that the thought was, by designating those spaces, we could get people to park in a more orderly manner, and we could actually gain some spaces, and it would make it better for keeping traffic moving through the downtown area to have that laid out, kind of in a neat, orderly way. And so we think it's a good step for us. I've got full confidence in the parking enforcement officers that they will use common sense as they enforce it. I think over time people will get very used to it and people will use them appropriately. And I think over time it'll work out well for us. We've added a lot of spaces, and when we added those spaces downtown, we added spaces out on South Street right in front of City Hall. We've added spaces now on 6th Street in front of the police station over there, and downtown's down towards the Long Center. We've added spaces on 4th Street that weren't there in the past. We've added spaces on Columbia Street that wasn't there on the path. And so we've got a lot of different places for people to park, and places where there are different types of volumes of traffic. And I think getting people in those spots and keeping them in there appropriately is a good first step for it. I don't see any real, negative to it. But again, it's something that we can continue to tweak as we go along. If there is something that we think we can do better or word better or enforce a little bit better, because parking is in-house and we don't contract with some third party that we have to try to work through to make adjustments, it's very easy for us to make adjustments on the fly, and I think this is a good first step.
What are police going to be allowed to or instructed to look for in terms of deciding whether people have run afoul of this ordinance?
Well, it will primarily be enforced by our parking enforcement folks that are civilians, and they know that their first job downtown is to be ambassadors, and we said that from the very beginning. How do we help downtown businesses? How do we help customers? And they will take that attitude into looking at that. If somebody is an inch over, they're not going to get a ticket for that. If they've taken up so much of the next space that it really impedes another car being able to even fit in there at all, and we're losing a space, which is what we're trying to avoid from people just randomly parking, then that car's probably going to get a ticket, just like the discretion that you have if it's, too close to the stop sign. Is it really too close that people can't see, or is it just barely too close that it's not really causing any type of visual impediment to people being able to safely see the sign and stop? And people, policemen use judgment, parking enforcement people use judgment. That's part of being human, and I feel good that we'll make those decisions. And like I said, if there's tweaks that need to be done, we'll do it. But I can honestly tell you, I really do not. We've got a lot of big things going on, and I really do not anticipate this being a major issue.
Let me ask about the possible chain reaction effect of somebody, say, taking a big truck or something and parking out the back of their parking space. if people are used to the idea of trying to park close to the car in front of them to try to maximize space, it would seem like you could wind up with several people in a row who are all out of the space that they are supposed to be in and thus all ticketable. Is that, could it work that way?
Well, I mean, any scenario is possible, right? And we could come up with the way it is right now that because there's no markings and somebody takes up too much space and somebody thinks they can squeeze in and they do, but they've got themselves a little bit on the yellow or a little bit into the handicap. They can get a ticket now also. So, of course, any of those scenarios are possible. But I think if it's a large truck like that, those enforcement officers will see what caused the original problem and deal with that appropriately. We have a lot of loading zones downtown for the larger trucks and for people making deliveries. And the large trucks typically just stop out in the street and put their flashers on, as I'm sure you've probably seen. So, again,
It seems like the converse, of course, is, you know, suppose someone parks their long pickup truck out the back of a space, and I realize that this law is in place, and I go, all right, wait, I shouldn't pull up right close to their bumper. I should go back another space and park within those lines. You've still lost a space there, which is what you're trying to avoid.
Right, and the spaces are laid out in a way that you can give a little bit and still get, depending on the size of the car, a car in the space appropriately. Maybe not all the time, depending on the size of the truck, but like I said, you know, we could come up with those examples of lines, no lines, or not having any parking signs downtown at all and any regulation. And so you just have to deal with those as they present themselves and make good decisions. And if people feel that they got a ticket unfairly, they are able to appeal that or just talk to Kevin. And a lot of times he'll review this. We take pictures, obviously, of every ticket we write. There's cameras, so there's photographic evidence of what actually took place. So there can be a review to make sure that the right decision was made, or if we needed to do something different. So again, of all the things going on, I really don't see this turning into that big a deal.
I don't think anybody would argue with you that downtown parking spaces are at a premium and should be protected so that as many people can use them as possible. Is this ordinance something of an admission that maybe you should consider, if it's at all possible, another downtown parking structure that isn't, for instance, close to the river as a couple of them are, something that's further up Main Street or something like that? Is that at all on the drawing board?
Yeah, and you probably followed in the media. Maybe we didn't talk about it on your show, but we did a Upper Main Street parking study. We used a consultant to look at that because we know that we are getting very close to needing another parking garage. We've actually tried to work on one development with a developer that was interested in building some condos and some other things, and the city may be partnering on the parking garage, but the configuration of the land and stuff just, it didn't make it work out. The parking garage was going to be about $7 million and not get the number of spaces that we really needed. And so, you know, we are looking at that because downtown is continuing to grow. Sometime here in the relatively near future, we probably will need to build another parking garage. We've actually had initial discussions with the county commissioners about that, about the possibility of partnering on the next structure. They have a garage. We have a garage. The possibility of partnering on the next structure. So, you know, that, and it's a fine line. When do you build that? Most places can't afford to build it and hope they will come. Parking garages are expensive to operate, and they are maintenance monsters. And so you have to be smart with your capital. You have to be smart with your operating budgets as you look to the future. And you really have to try to time that where you get it done in a way that doesn't turn away potential development, but you don't build it so soon that you can't at least start to begin to recover some of your cost and at least meet your operation cost in a reasonable period of time where you'd be taking funds away from other needed city services.
Let me ask you a couple of other kind of road-related questions. We talked with Mayor Barton from Crawfordsville on our show with him last month about the fact that he's not going to be able to produce as many of the amenities from his Stellar Communities grant as he had hoped because contractors are seeing that their demand is going up for all sorts of different projects. You've got a whole bunch of stuff in the works. We've talked about what's going on Sagamore Parkway and places like that, and you're getting set to do some things this summer. I wondered if you're running into a similar phenomenon where people are wanting to charge you more than you had originally budgeted for some of these things.
Well, that's certainly happened in the past. As you look at engineering estimates, we always have that for our projects. And when construction is at a peak and everyone is really busy, you know, those bids typically do go up. And particularly some of the smaller jobs really go up because they don't want, there's not as much value in those winning those bids. And if they are going to win them, they want that job to kind of be at a premium. So we certainly run into that to time to time, certainly with some smaller to medium-sized jobs. Fortunately, many of the projects that we do are of significant size. So take, for example, the Sagamore Parkway Phase 3 that we just getting ready to start. That bid actually came in underneath the engineer's estimate. We actually got a very, very good bid on that we're very happy with. The Brown Street Sewer Project, which again is an extremely large multi-million dollar project. We do that through that energy efficiency program, and it's a little bit unique. We found a way to value engineer that and probably save $6 to $8 million. But then even on top of that, when the final numbers came back in from Bowen Engineering that's doing that, they were actually lower than we thought we would be. We did bid one traffic signal out at the intersection of Hagerty and Veterans Memorial Parkway to assist SIA. As you probably know, they put in a new parking lot there off Hagerty because of their continued growth, which is very good for the community. That bid came in a little bit over, but you know, was this is going to be close. It was $162,000 was the engineer's estimate, and it came in at like $165,000, so just within a few thousand. But again, you know, you're coming down. It's a smaller, medium-sized job that you still have to mobilize for. So, you know, knock on wood, right now the first quarter of the year so far, our bids are coming in very well for us. Will that continue for the rest of the year as people get busier and busier? We did get the big bid for the Sagamore Parkway project. We did get that out before NDOT had let all their big projects for the year, so we got in there just a little bit ahead of time. So we'll have to see how the rest of the year unfolds.
While we're talking about NDOT, I wanted to mention to you something that the new commissioner, Joe McGinnis, said when he was at Purdue for the annual road school this week, and I know you attended some of those meetings as well. And one of the things he said was that I think a main street, and he picked a town, he said Greenfield, Indiana, could be just as important an economic driver as completing I-69. And I wanted your opinion on that as somebody who's got a large highway going through his community, but also someone who's trying to do a lot with your local streetscapes. What do you make of that as the position of the person who runs the road department in the state? Is that useful to you?
Well, yes, it absolutely is. First, let me say, you know, Joe is a great guy, and I got to know him when he was the mayor of Franklin, and we actually did a presentation together down at the Indiana Association of Cities and Towns where we were both highlighting what we were doing in our communities, and he's very progressive, and he gets it. He understands that for communities in the state to be successful in a global economy, it all does matter, right? The major highways have to have the capacity to move goods, services, logistics for large businesses, small businesses. But he also understands that last mile matters coming into a town to be aesthetically pleasing, to begin to present your community. He understands that Main Street, those amenities that go along with having good roads, good trails, good parks, attract and retain talent, that people now choose where they want to live sometimes even before they choose where they want to work. Companies are looking at amenities that communities offer so they can keep and retain good employees and attract people to the community. He understands that it just can't be an either or, that you have to be able to do both of those if Indiana is going to really remain competitive.
And credit where credit is due, because when he was mayor, then Mayor McGinnis took a kind of sagging downtown in the middle of Franklin and did a lot of improvements to it in a fairly short time as mayor. It sounds like you think this is a good thing because the last couple of NDOT commissioners have not come from leading a municipal government. They've come from the business sector and other places.
Technology sector.
Exactly, yes. Right. And so it sounds like you think having having a former mayor in here is going to benefit you and the other mayors who are saying, look, I have this one little sewer project. Can you help me out? Because it's going to help move these people and these cars and these businesses a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, Joe's not going to pay for our sewer, but he might help pay for the road across the sure. top of the sewer. But yes, I absolutely do. And I mentioned to you before we came on air here that I had a chance to go down to Indianapolis last week. There was about 10 of us mayors that met with Joe kind of privately, and then also the deputy commissioner of Capital Projects, which is actually Travis Underhill, that was Joe's city engineer. He brought him along with him. And I think having that, it was a great discussion. I mean, I am thrilled at the direction it appears that NDOT is going. You know, having those folks that have that local understanding of the communities and what it takes, because, you know, even just paving is important. Keeping your neighborhood streets up, how it affects drainage, how it affects handicap accessibility. Having people in there that actually understand that and how that ties into the larger transportation networks of our highways, or whether it's passenger rail. We talked about passenger rail and commuters and bus service and all of those things that have to take place for our communities to really be vibrant. I think Indiana is going to be served well by having you know, him in there and being a mayor. I might be just a little bit biased, right? But I honestly think that brings a really unique perspective to that, that quite frankly, like you said, we haven't had before. People came out kind of strictly on the business side or out of the IT side. And the things that Travis was saying about how he would, you know, wanted to empower the people at NDOT to make decisions at a much more local level and in the district levels to get projects done and to help us keep moving, because in road projects, time really is money, and it can be a lot of money. And if there are ways that we can speed up some of those projects or work through processes that don't have quite as much red tape on them and still come up with just wonderful, wonderful finished products, the money that they'll raise in Indiana for roads will go farther. I mean, they'll get more done.
So let me ask you about the other side of that. I know you were at the luncheon where Governor Holcomb was being questioned by President and former Governor Daniels. And one of the things Governor Holcomb said was, he says when he's talking to people about economic development projects, he's talking about bridges over the Ohio River. He's talking about double tracking the South Shore up in the northwestern part of the state. And he says, I think these are local projects. He's wrong, frankly. They're clearly state or regional projects that affect multiple communities and, in fact, multiple states in some cases. Do you have to help Joe McGinnis square this disconnect between him and the guy who hired him?
Well, that's the great thing about being the governor, being the mayor, that you have staff, right? And so that staff works together, you know, with everyone and with myself or with the governor to look at all those projects to see how they do impact local communities and how they impact the state as a whole and keep us competitive. And you know, I don't want to mix words too much. I thought Governor Holcomb did a great job yesterday during his presentation. I was very pleased with what he said and the direction that he sees the state moving in and how he's looking forward, and specifically something that he said that just stuck with me, that, you know, really is my mantra, and I was just so proud of him and so glad to hear it. He said, you know, we're going to come out of this session with something for our roads. Everything is still on the table. The only thing is not on the table is doing nothing, and then he was going to have the political courage and the political will to get something done, and I think that says volumes about the direction our state's going, what it can mean for state and him as the leader in the state, and I'm sure him and the NDOT commissioner view that, and we'll work through that, and I'm, you know, all things considered, I'm very pleased with where I see NDOT going.
All right, well, Mr. Mayor, as always, we've run out of time before I ran out of questions, so we've got some stuff we'll hang on to for next month and look forward to talking to you then.
Thank you, Stan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember that we'll have our conversation at this time next week with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Send your questions in advance to ask@WBAA.org, and you can find all these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzewski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.